Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
We are announcing the availability of approximately $6 billion that will be utilized to pay producers major losses resulting from weather events in 2020 and 2021.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack on USDA's new emergency relief program.
Now, this is going to cover crops, trees, bushes, and vines. We expect and anticipate that this will result in checks arriving sometime in the latter part of this month or the first part of June. This is the first tranche of resources provided under this program. There will be a second set of payments under both the livestock program and the crop program sometime in the summer to cover those who did not have livestock indemnity coverage, livestock forage coverage, or crop insurance or NAP coverage, or had shallow losses. But the vast majority of producers who sustained losses during 2020 and 2021 will receive payments this spring, which is good news.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We are announcing today the availability of approximately $6 billion that will be utilized to pay producers for major losses resulting from weather events in 2020 and 2021. This was part of the $10 billion package that Congress passed, providing additional emergency relief.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack announcing the Emergency Relief Program, ERP, formerly known as WIP Plus. How will ERP work?
We anticipate and expect that roughly 220,000 producers who had crop insurance losses and roughly 4,000 producers who had NAP coverage may benefit from this relief announcement today. Now, this is going to cover crops, trees, bushes, and vines. Producers will receive pre-filled applications with most of the information necessary for them to apply for resources under this program. All they have to do is fill in the remaining boxes and sign it and get it back to FSA as quickly as possible. We expect and anticipate that this will result in checks arriving sometime in the latter part of this month or the first part of June. Certainly, a much more efficient and much more rapid system than previous efforts under similar programs where producers sometimes had to wait a number of months before they received significant payments.
Now, he also makes it clear this will cover shallow losses.
This is the first tranche of resources provided under this program. There will be a second set of payments under both the livestock program and the crop program sometime in the summer to cover those who did not have livestock indemnity coverage, livestock forage coverage, or crop insurance or NAP coverage, or had shallow losses. But the vast majority of producers who sustained losses during 2020 and 2021 will receive payments this spring, which is good news.
It will also include dairy assistance.
The milk loss on farm and stored commodity portions of the relief effort will also be done sometime this summer. So that's good news, and we're glad to see that that resource getting out to farmers.
Vilsack, attending a G7 meeting, also said it's at the top of mind for many, fertilizer.
This isn't necessarily in terms of additional crop production, but it is, all of us are concerned about the fertilizer circumstances situation in the world today. Again, export bans complicating this. I wanted to make sure that my counterparts in the G7 and others that we met with were aware of the fact that we are attempting to try to over time, reduce the strain and stress in that particular area by focusing a $500 million effort to try to determine how we can, in the U.S., be a bit more self-sufficient in that respect. I think there are other countries that are going to be looking at the same. And we're also going to continue to do research and try to figure out ways in which we can use the fertilizer that we do have available more efficiently. But that's obviously a concern as well.
Vilsack also said the ERP Phase 1 payments will be prorated by 75% to ensure adequate funding for all disaster programs. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
The first trend that we spent quite a little bit of time talking about was produce more with less environmental impact.
Association of Equipment Manufacturers jumping into the future of food production. And Kurt Blade, Senior Vice President with AEM.
That is obviously what farmers have historically always done to be more efficient. What is changing now because of societal demands is, you know, farmers have always been pretty innovative on trying to get more crops out of the acre. What we recognize now is that there is a societal benefit to that as well, and really producing more with less. Let's look about how innovative farmers have been this past year out of necessity with their judicious use of fertilizer because of the prices there. I think we're going to see more and more of that, where the pressure is to do more with less, both from an economic standpoint, but also putting less active ingredient on the ground. And that has a very positive environmental story.
AEM in this paper revealed 13 trends, but says number two was optimization of water use.
Real. Water scarcity is real. And I think, you know, the consumer demands for water, the urban demands for water, are really coming to head with the agriculture demands for water in some of the great growing areas like California. I think we have to be very, very, very smart on where we're growing our crops, and also be very smart about what crops we plant in what areas to ensure that we are optimizing for water use. We're going to hear a lot more about that in the next 10 years.
The third trend for the future of food production looks at the demand for protein.
And we kind of went down a whole path during the discussion of, you know, what does that mean for animal protein? What does that mean for plant-based protein? I don't really want to get into the politics of those or the individual pieces of those. I think the reality is, as society gets wealthier, we know this, they demand more protein. It's still a little bit up in the air of what's going to win. I mean, I think there's no... question that there's always going to be a strong place for animal protein. But we can't ignore the fact that there is a growing interest in plant-based protein as societies develop as well. And I think agriculture is absolutely in the right spot to take advantage of that, to feed some of those developing worlds that are getting more wealthy, such as, you know, sub-Saharan Africa or some of the areas East Asia that maybe historically have not had protein-based diets, but as they become more wealthy, they tend to consume more protein.
The fourth trend looked at supply chains.
Taking a look at the fact that the future, a trend that is clearly popping up is a shorter feed supply chain. We learned a lot during the pandemic that our food supply chain is remarkably efficient. We also learned that it is incredibly fragile. And a lot of things are being done in the local areas, bringing production closer to consumption, or bringing processing closer to consumption, to kind of shorten that supply chain a little bit. Again, maybe not something that we will see right away, but I think there's absolutely a growing trend for food to be to tighten that supply chain or shorten that supply chain to connect the farm to the fork in a much more easy way. That also includes things like vertical farming and the use of greenhouses for certain crops. I see that happening in increasing amounts over the next 10 to 20 years.
See all 13 trends online at AEM.org. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Smart Ag and Forestry in itself is a mouthful, and it is. It's $1 billion. It's a huge pot of money. It's a huge effort.
John Duff, Executive Vice President, National Sorghum Producers, on USDA's Partnership for Climate Smart Commodities.
Of course, the grant program that you're referring to, $1 billion, saw extremely strong interest. We applied along with 450 other. Along with 349 other groups, for a total of 450 programs that were proposed under this. And in a nutshell, what USDA is trying to do is figure out how and help the market figure out how the function, the ecosystem services market, that is. There's a lot of opportunity, obviously, in sustainability and carbon and general ecosystem services for American agriculture. We are the leaders in agricultural sustainability, bar none. And we are largely not compensated for that, apart from the compensation that comes back for the commodity production itself. And so everyone's trying to figure out how to monetize that, how to get farmers compensated for that. But a lot of people are calling it the Wild West right now in terms of what these markets are paying for, how they're paying, what frameworks they're using, what methodologies, the value practices, how they're compensating the farmer, what the contract looks like, what the terms look like. All those things are very, very up in the air and very unknown. And so what this program is trying to do is get to the bottom of all that and say, here's what the practices should be. Here's what the value should be. Here's how the market should function. Here's how the contract should look. Here's what the terms should be. And help farmers really get better opportunities that are safer, less risky, that compensate them better and more fairly for the value of the ecosystem services markets that they're providing. And we submitted a program and project, like I said, just like 349 other groups did. And it's, you know, it offers a menu of practices, value on how an ecosystem services market in California values them. Farmers will have the opportunity to pick and implement those practices in order to receive compensation.
Even though it did receive criticism, Duff says the results could be huge for ag.
It received a fair amount of criticism, even from folks in our industry on the front end, that this is $1 billion and it's a really quick turnaround. We ended up having about 90 days to submit a proposal, and it wasn't a very extensive proposal. It was an extensive effort, but the application itself went very long, and a lot of folks were understandably apprehensive about how a process like this could really translate into real answers. But, you know, after going through that process and thinking through all the things that we had to think through to put a program together, and to put a program together that over the next 5 years will lead to the outcome that we want, and that's clarity in ecosystem services markets for sorghum farmers, I think that it was a pretty good way to do it. It made us think pretty creatively about things. And I think with 450 different approaches, there's going to have to be some good ideas that come from all that. And will there be waste? Will there be inefficiencies? Absolutely, there always is. But frankly, that's part of the reason you want government to fund some of these things, is so that we've got the freedom to fail and realize that, hey, that was a bad idea. And so government kind of de-risks it, and hopefully 5 years from now and 450 shots at it, we will have a good idea of how to better compensate the farmer for the value of these practices.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Our fifth trend, which we refer to as the geographic shifts in production, this is largely related to weather pattern changes, but also to genetics as they advance.
Kurt Blades is with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, or AEM, and recently identified 13 trends for the future of food production.
I remember a number of years ago, there was a cover of Successful Farming magazine talked about the new Corn Belt being several degrees higher on the map than it is right now. And I think it's very real for us to recognize that there's going to be a shift in where crops are grown. And I think we have to be prepared for that. Some of the crops that maybe historically have been grown in Texas, you know, may move a little bit further north, and some of the crops that have historically been grown in Iowa may also move a little bit north.
Number six is food traceability.
This is something being driven by the consumer packaged goods companies, but also being driven by consumer advocacy groups to really provide that transparency that consumers are looking for. We found that to be, first of all, the technology is allowing that like it never has been able to before, whether that is using blockchain technology or some of the scanning of labels to allow for that traceability and record keeping. Consumers are demanding that. Certainly vocal consumer groups are absolutely demanding that. And the good news is the technology is there to support it. And I can see more and more of that happening. That's not necessarily a bad thing when we can increase the level of trust that consumers have in the way we're growing our food, that we're doing it in a sustainable and responsible manner. That's a good thing. It may change the way we do things a little bit here and there, but overall, telling that story that farmers are the original stewards of the land, that we do take care of our animals in a positive way,
That's always a good thing. So that traceability has both some positives and some negatives to it.
Regulation is at the heart of trend number 7, maybe more pointed to the regulation of emissions.
Depending on where you are geographically, this is coming at this may be coming at you pretty fast. As an example, in California, there's some laws on the books right now of really limiting the use of internal combustion engines of a certain size. A lot of those are used in orchard production, so there's an absolute shift to a different power sources to deal with emission regulations. I think there's also some room to grow with existing power that we have here in the Midwest, whether it's diesel. But I think there's going to be a lot of pressure from regulators for farmers to reduce their emission, and that's going to force us to be a little bit creative of how we adjust our practices and maybe even some of our tillage practices and maybe even some of the equipment that we use to really respond to those regulations. Again, not all necessarily negative, because there are some opportunities to take advantage of new technologies that comes with those changing pieces.
And on the list of 13, checking in at number 8.
Strong efforts to decarbonize our economy, and that really creates some really interesting adjacent economies. I'm sure a lot of your listeners that are farmers have talked about, you know, participating in carbon markets or signing up for a carbon market to get some credits for their crops. I think that's a market that's going to continue to grow and be very interesting. I don't want to be predictive and say what it is going to look like. I just hope that farmers are able to participate in that. And it's without question, there will be some adjacent markets and some places for farmers to play in that space if they so choose to.
All 13 trends available online at AEM.org. It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Today, we are at an inflection point that requires us to carefully consider the benefits of an alternative clearing structure and ensure it does not compromise the battle-tested protections and checks of the existing clearing model.
Walt Lucan, President and CEO of the Futures Industry Association, at a recent House Ag Committee hearing on the FTX proposal. It's a trend in new clearinghouse models. He says the proposal opens a door for debate and consideration.
The CFTC is now considering a proposal by FTX that would replace the traditional clearing model that distributes risk using futures commission merchants with a more automated and centralized one. Specifically, the FTX direct clearing proposal would, for the first time, combine margin futures with near real-time margining, 24/7 auto liquidation of under-margined customers, and a self-funded CCP default fund without the benefits of FCMs managing, underwriting, and mutualizing customer risk. It's important to point out that the FTX proposal would permit futures trading in any underlying asset class transacted by any type of customer, including commercial hedgers. This requires us to view this proposal with an eye beyond retail cryptocurrencies. We must also consider the core users of our markets, including farmers, refiners, pension funds, and other Main Street businesses that use futures to hedge price risk in the real economy. When contemplating such transformative change, FIA encourages policymakers to consider the fundamental guiding framework articulated in President Biden's recent executive order on digital assets. Same business, same risks, same rules. FIA believes the CFTC must analyze FTX's proposal against the important customer protections and risk management functions that registered FCMs currently provide the marketplace. As agents for their customers, FCMs hold various regulatory responsibilities, including vetting customers on the appropriateness of these leveraged products, policing clients for money laundering, segregating customer funds, guaranteeing customer trades, holding significant regulatory capital against those trades, contributing to clearinghouse default funds, and agreeing to further assessments should the CCP default fund need replenishment. Today, U.S. registered FCMs contribute more than $15 billion to CCP default funds and hold an additional $175 billion of their own regulatory capital. This layer of financial resources backstops the potential default of customers and protects the markets and the wider financial system from a contagion event. FI believes there needs to be further analysis of the FTX risk model in extreme but plausible scenarios, especially for large commercial participants in other asset classes beyond retail cryptocurrencies. Given the model relies on continuous liquid markets that are open 24/7, questions remain around the market impact of auto liquidation feature for closeout of large positions in less liquid markets. We must ensure that the model does not trigger a broader fire sale in the central price discovery market that harms hedgers and exacerbates further market disruption. To conclude, FI supports efforts to further advance real-time risk management and clearing and bring greater competition to the markets. The FTX proposal has advanced a healthy debate in our industry. However, we believe that further analysis and information are needed on the FTX proposal, and we look forward to the deliberative process of the CFTC that will help bring additional clarity and information to this unique clearing model.
That FTX proposal is for a cryptocurrency exchange. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Trend number 9 was really adjusting that connectivity gap.
There are 13 trends on the future of food production from the Association of Equipment Manufacturers. Kurt Blades is Senior Vice President.
I mean, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, the upcoming farm bill, and countless other pieces of legislation, both at the federal level and at the state levels, are really hoping to bridge that digital divide that exists between rural and urban areas. We as AEM have been pretty adamant about ensuring that we take it not just to those anchor institutions like schools and libraries in rural areas, but also making sure that we have wireless connectivity in the field. That allows constant connectivity of a piece of equipment. When a machine is constantly connected to the internet, a lot of things that machine can do. And I think we're going to see the unleash of pretty major pieces of technology that come about when that technology connectivity gap is closed in the next 10 years.
Trend number 10 is artificial intelligence.
We're just at the cusp of what that means to have, insights driving everything that we do, whether it's a tractor and a sprayer that can identify a weed versus the crop you're trying to grow and immediately spray it or till it, and then also learn what that health looks like. I think we're on the cusp of some really cool things on using artificial intelligence to allow that to enable some really neat insight in our farming.
Blade says trend number 11 is tied to artificial intelligence.
But that has a downside, and that is cybersecurity. And, when you have machines that are as connected and, as reliant on data as our machines are today and farming is today, we are vulnerable to cybersecurity. And I think all the manufacturers are taking this very seriously, as well as, the elevators and food production kind of all across the board. We got to recognize that there is a real need for us to beef up our cybersecurity protocols in rural America.
The last two trends, according to Blades.
And then the final two really have to do with the finances. And number 12 is a farm ownership model changes. And it's been said for some time that the typical landowner in Iowa is a 72-year-old widow female. That's still very true. I think what we're finding is that as we get into the next 10 to 20 years, there'll be a major transaction of land, either inheritance or transactions of land, that really create a different business model where maybe the land is separated from the farm even further than it has been before, where the farm is a business, the land is a separate business. That changes, input practices, that changes farming practices in ways I don't know that we completely have figured out just yet. But it's no secret that there are some major investors in farmland, such as Bill Gates as an example, is currently the largest private owner of farmland in the United States. He's doing that for a reason, and others like him are doing that. That changes the business model of farming a little bit. And then to cap the whole thing off is not just related to land, but let's really look at new business models that emerge in agriculture, whether that is someone focusing specifically on a carbon market or a new business farming focusing specifically on precision ag consulting, or whether it is vertical farming or something else. There is just a ton of runway here for new businesses and new business models to come out of this kind of convergence of things that are happening in agriculture right now. I'll tell you, I couldn't be more excited about it.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
USDA is forecasting U.S. production of all wheat for this upcoming marketing year to be up from this past season, but only by 83 million bushels at a bit over 1.7 billion. Wheat growers planted almost 47.5 million acres, but the drought has been relentless, and USDA now projects growers will only get a crop off maybe 37 million.
Highest wheat abandonment since 2002.
USDA Outlook Board Chairman Mark Chekanowski says the winter wheat crop, which accounts for most of U.S. wheat production, could end up 8% smaller than last season. And he says supplies over this next season will be drawn down and down. Wheat exports could be the smallest since 1971. But as to prices, which are already high,
prices are expected to remain high. A lot of that wheat will be marketed early at very high or record high prices.
And for the entire marketing year, Mark expects prices to average $10.75 a bushel, a full $3 more than this past season. Gary Crawford, Washington.